You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, Andrew Wiebe is sick in New York, New York. I knew that everyone would still want that. So this is David Goss here on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMFC Channel 85. That's Matt Doyle cackling in the background. Surprisingly not the famous Ben Bear laugh, so people didn't actually know you were on. That was pretty low-key for you. Post-U.S. national team happy weekend.
I'm keeping it mysterious these days.
You are very mysterious, Ben. What was it you said? What was your line today? Someone tweeted out that someone said you were the least.
Well, I haven't been posting on my Instagram or Snapchat accounts very much recently. And I said, you know, I'm just trying to keep it mysterious these days.
And someone then said to you, you're the least mysterious person they know?
Yeah, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
She
but
has
yeah.
no idea what she's talking about. Well, it's been a great weekend.
God.
U.S. national team starts it out with a win, a little bit of MLS. Matt Doyle went as a fan. Mm-hmm. He is now an official supporter of the New York Red Bulls once
again. No.
He's
a neutral fan.
He's back in.
I wore Caps colors. I did not.
Did you actually wear Caps colors?
Yeah, I had, you know, blue and gray.
But was it like sky blue or whatever?
Did you have raindrops on your shirt?
Was it sea to sky?
There were no raindrops. It was just some old swag from, I don't know, one of the events that we had, MLS digital style. So.
Okay, so where is our level of excitement at, Ben? You were not on the show with us last weekend. U.S. national team comes out 4-0 win against Panama at Orlando City Stadium. Christian Pulisic, the greatest soccer player of all time, scores in the 8th minute. Josie gets it done in the 19th. Panenka in the 43rd. Bobby Wood in the second half, 4-0. We were all nervous going into this. Doyle hadn't slept for like weeks. You were off at a wedding?
I was off at a wedding.
Experiencing this through Twitter?
Wait, you got married?
Yeah, No, not me.
Not you. So this was, I mean, missing a game of this importance, it had to be like a close family member or something, right?
No, it wasn't. It was just a friend. But I already RSVP'd before the last round of games, and I was like, it really only bad things could happen. Like, either we beat Panama, and it's a relief, and it's really more relief than like exciting
right.
thing.
Or
we lose, it's like
draw.
The worst day ever.
Yeah, but there's one thing that was definitely never going to happen was like a really like aesthetically pleasing multi-goal win.
No, never. That was never going to happen. I mean, honestly, the important part of this whole game was that I wasn't in attendance. The two home qualifier games in the hex that we lost, I was in attendance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really my fault.
Mm-hmm.
As we know from my Barentees, I mean, you know, this is all just part of the what my
You've done the math
my
on
ethos.
This.
Part of his mystery.
My ethos.
Yeah.
So
that's what keeps you mysterious.
I watched the first 10 minutes of the game on my phone during like a cocktail or a type deal, and then as soon as Pulisic scored, I was like, "They got this.
We good.
We're good." I rewatched the game yesterday. Surprisingly to me, it's like I didn't catch a lot of what people were talking about after the game. Panama had plenty of chances.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Gabby Torres should have scored the minute, like a minute before Pulisic. There was a couple. Quintero, why wasn't he doing that with
top
San Jose?
Of the box when he megged Omar.
Yeah,
right?
When he megged Omar. Like, where was that when he was in San Jose? He was killing the U.S. the entire game.
I mean, the end product that he showed on that play, that was there in San Jose.
Fair. It was way more open than I was expecting it to be.
And that was the risk. That was the gamble Bruce took. And he came out and he straight up said it. After the game, he's like, "Look, I wanted us to attack with 5. I said, you know, I was willing to take a chance on Bradley just holding down central midfield pretty much by himself, because Panama's not gonna beat you like that. They might get to the final third, but they don't know what to do when they get there." That Bruce didn't say that last part, but it was pretty strongly implied. And the fact that they only put 2 shots on goal. And then you saw what it allowed the U.S. to do in the other direction. And then when Hernan Dario Gomez made that sub, he was like, it's because it would have ended up being 10-0. We were just playing for goal differential at that point is what he ended up saying.
Which they did, and they still struggled to keep. You'd think you would have dropped 11 behind the ball at that point and, like, held the fort. They still went out there, opened up, and got killed after that point. They brought Armando Cooper in off the bench. When you look at this game, one of the things we talked about afterwards on Club and Country after the whistle, which will be coming back. Why? Because the U.S. national team has one more game. They still have to get this done. They are 2 points ahead of both
Long
Panama
way to go,
and
people.
Honduras. Last game away at Trinidad and Tobago at Otto Bolden Stadium,
we
which
think.
Seems to be flooding right now, and we'll see how that ends up. But it's an 8 p.m. game on beIN Sports and NBC Universo. We will be on Club and Country both pre- and post-game on MLSsoccer.com. So send us all your questions, your comments. Come to us before the game to get everything ready once we get starting lineups to talk you through it, and then post-game to talk about what either – hopefully has happened for the U.S. national team in going to the World Cup, or the travesty that is the U.S. national team at this point not qualifying for the whole thing. But when you look at it, Ben, is there anything you walk away from this game where you learned, not just from that game, but for the U.S. national team? Anything, any players in certain positions, any part of the formation, any person, certain attributes that you want out there?
The problem with like all of these kind of discussions to me, like we could talk about Pulisic playing in the middle, or two forwards, or five in the back, or four in the back. All of these problems that we try and decipher, every game is different. When mm-hmm. you're playing Panama, it makes more sense to throw five players forward. When you're playing, let's say, Egypt in the World Cup, or Argentina, nice. Or what? Yeah, I did that for guys.
National team, first time in 27 years. Let's go.
I don't think something that may work against Panama is necessarily going to work against a stronger opponent in a neutral site. And what I took away from this game is that Wood and Altidor seem to have found some sort of connection, and they can make it work. Whatever formation Bruce chooses to use going forward, we've seen now, you know, they haven't always made it work, but this game, I think, that was the best part to me, watching those two work together.
And that's now, if you're saying, and I think most people are, that Pulisic has to play central, you start to put together a formation. When you talk about Trinidad and Tobago away, the U.S. national team going there, they've only ever lost once at Trinidad and Tobago in World Cup qualifying. That was in 2008 in the semifinal round, and they already qualified for the Hex.
Yeah, they took like a C team.
Right, and they've shut out Trinidad and Tobago 12 times. So they've not had great success down there in terms of pretty games, but they've gotten results. What do you expect? He made big changes at Honduras, at Mexico, Bruce did.
The difference with that is that we know that Bruce had two very thought-out game plans for those two games. Mm-hmm. He knew months in advance what he was going to do against Mexico, what he was going to do against Honduras. He made it seem like he said before the Panama game that he hadn't even thought about Trinidad yet.
Yeah, I mean,
he
was lying.
He's lying. Yeah.
Yeah, I know he's lying.
It's a lie.
But I know he's lying. But I don't think he thought as much about this game
right.
maybe as he did.
I think he
didn't have as much time. He didn't
when you look at what Trinidad are as a team, the fact that they'll be without Kenwyn Jones, who's not on this roster, and Kevin Molino, who's a yellow card accumulation, so he's out. Those are their two most talented attackers, and the rest of their roster. I mean, it's going to be played in a mud pit. This is a very CONCACAF-y game, which means mistakes at the back and set pieces. So I think you bring the extra center back on. You put Jeff Cameron in the middle of that back line and have either Omar Gonzalez on one side and either Beasler or Ream on the other. And you go with the 3-5-2, or call it 5-3-2 if you want, and you try to win those second balls in midfield. You make sure that any knockdown headers, that you have numbers around them so that you don't give up an Urania type of goal, because that's the only way Trinidad's going to score from the run of play. So you win those second balls in midfield, and you keep it tight at the back, and hopefully you do your thing on set pieces. And then you just rely on Wood and Josie and Pulisic, with maybe mm-hmm. Dempsey in there at some point, just to go 3-on-5 and figure something out, because they're smart enough to do it.
A draw, a win, U.S. qualifies automatically.
100%.
A draw, there's a good chance the U.S. goes through.
It's like
99.99999.
Panama and have to make up insane goal differentials plus win for the U.S. to not get through if they draw. And if you lose, it is still questionable, because if Panama wins or Honduras wins, you're probably out. So when you look at this team, One of the things I found interesting, Nate Bucati tweeted at us after we did our show, play-by-play for Sporting KC, one of the best soccer announcers out there, and he said, at what point do we stop saying Beisler and Omar did well together and keep hoping that someone who we think has higher top-end potential play in at center back and say that Omar and Matt Beisler are our starters? Now, we walked away from Friday night, and Wiebe said, I know, Matt Beisler is 100% on the World Cup roster because he's so reliable. Mm-hmm. And he was good in that game.
Yep.
But you said how open it was. I don't know that I still trust those two as our center back pairing. At what point do you have to start solidifying this thing, though?
I mean, if Brooks and Cameron end up staying hurt for the next 9 months, then probably then. But if you're forcing me to choose between Beisler and Omar or John Brooks and Jeff Cameron, it's Brooks and Cameron. It has to be Brooks and Cameron. They're just better. And no offense to Beisler and Omar, who've gotten it done repeatedly and have done pretty well when they played in the World Cup and in these big moments, and we're lucky to have them on the list. But when it comes to world-class upside, John Brooks has got it. When it comes to – I know Cameron had a shocker against Costa Rica, but in general, he's been, I think, our best and most versatile center back. So it's those two guys. And maybe Matt Miazga pushes in as well, because I think the world of him. And this isn't to run Beisler and Omar down. They got the job done when we needed them to, and that's awesome. But I'm not going to be stoked if we see them on the field against Germany next summer. You know, that would not thrill me.
I talked about the ceiling for this team, and I didn't know. I still don't know where it's at based on what I saw on Friday. And you look at that attacking three, though. Is that the best we've seen for the U.S. over the last, I don't know, 10? Does this get into the Dempsey-Donovan 2010 territory?
2009. Cause
right.
Before the Davies injury.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Josie Davies.
Which was a Donovan very Dempsey. Short time period.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 4 months,
yeah,
right? From Confed Cup to World Cup qualifying when he got in the car accident.
If you want to go back to what this game sets up as, I think he's going to go with Pulisic, Josie, and Bobby. Go and figure it out.
Yeah.
I think you see maybe
– You don't protect them
the
at three, all
3-5-2, and you put Dax in the midfield and win every –
You
like,
don't protect those three at all and say, like, bring Pulisic off the bench if you need him because you don't know what the field physically is going to be like. You don't know how hard Trinidad and Tobago are going to play him?
I mean, you're going to shout out Will Kunz for this because he came out to me and Ben like 15 minutes ago literally asking this question. I get
I just think everyone wants to come and learn at the master's feet.
Right.
When you're in the office, people come and they say.
Oh, you are the worst.
They say, master, teach me.
I understand the impetus to want to protect Pulisic because we've seen some CONCACAFI tackles, and he was on the end of one from Anibal Godoy the other day. He limped out of the stadium, so maybe he won't even be able to play. But I don't he's going to be playing these games for the next 12, 15 years. You got to trust – he's a man. You got to trust him to understand – to feel when these are coming and know how to avoid them. Just like, Dempsey's been doing it for 12 years – Landon did it for almost 15, and it stinks, but the good news is U.S. players can now take a card because there's no worry that, the second yellow card gets you suspended for the next game because there is no next game. The bad news is I'm not sure Trinidad has anybody on the team who they care about enough to be like, oh, no, don't foul this guy hard, whereas with us, obviously, Pulisic is it, but you gotta trust him.
Although World Cup expanding in after the next cycle, this game does not matter that much potentially after the next 4 years. But Pulisic will be a part of the U.S. national team anyway. When you look at it, I said the U.S. 13-1-3 in World Cup qualifying against Trinidad and Tobago with 12 shutouts, 7 times down in Trinidad and Tobago, 4-1-2 in the conference in the Confederation. Kendall Waston. Stoppage time equalizer, one of the greatest parties I think we've seen in CONCACAF in a really long time. Like, everyone was going nuts after that one. Rips the shirt off. The coach is in the stands. I didn't know who was on the field, who was playing, who was not. I wish that I could have been a part of that. That looked like a lot of fun, and Costa Rica qualified.
Yeah, and it looked a lot less fun for the Hondurans.
Yeah.
They were devastated. I mean, and not like that extra 2 points would have guaranteed them anything, but... I mean, they would be on the cusp with a home game against Mexico. That was obviously a huge goal for Costa Rica. And by the way, they've made 4 out of 5 World Cups now for a nation of, what, 3.6 million or something like that?
And went to the quarterfinal.
Yeah, and went to the quarterfinal. Pretty decent. But my God, Honduras were devastated.
Well, and we're talking about third place right now for the U.S. national team, but the fourth place playoff is a huge opportunity for a Panama team that's never qualified for a World Cup. It's not going to be easy. Potentially Australia, potentially Syria, although I think it's going to be Australia based on what we saw last week. That is a huge opportunity for Honduras and Panama. Like, mm-hmm. It's not like third place is that's it and that's all you're gunning for. Honduras would have had a chance if they'd won that game. Right now, Panama's back in the driver's seat.
Also, you know, the U.S. could be part of that playoff.
That is
true. Let's also, there's a lot of talk about, like, third place. We're already in. You know,
the U.S.
could be going to Australia, too.
Do you have the odds?
I mean, the 93%. We have actual odds now, so, like, we don't have to do this whole thing.
There's 93% chance the U.S. gets third place.
It's less than that, right? It's like 84% or something like that.
The U.S. gets third.
Yes.
Scrolling through Paul Carr's timeline.
And 93% chance that they qualify, including it. Yeah. Last little piece, MLS-wise, Juan Carlos Osorio defended Giovanni Dos Santos in the press after he started him, saying today he competed at a high intensity for a much longer period than in previous games. Now we hope to get him back in the footballing sense so he can demonstrate his talent. I don't know what any of that means.
What does that mean? I mean, I didn't see that game, but
yeah, I don't know.
I don't know any of that means. I don't know any of that means.
But Juan Carlos Osorio out here defending Giovanni Dos Santos, so LA Galaxy fans can watch out for that one. Speaking of the LA Galaxy, because that's all we're going to talk about on this show, because they're out of it and they don't mean anything, but we love LA, right?
Oh, yeah, we're all definitely Galaxy fans here.
New York Red Bulls clinched their playoff spot on Saturday. Matt Doyle was in the house. We are going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all the teams that didn't get in, what they have to do for next year, which ones we were most surprised about, and, of course, talk about the teams heading into Decision Day and the playoffs. We'll be back here on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Like we always do with this time, I go for mine, I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky. Go for mine, I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMFC Channel 85. Andrew Wiebe celebrating too much. The U.S. national team's win on Friday night. Went out to RBA on Saturday with Mr. Matt Doyle to enjoy the game. Couldn't handle himself. Now he's home. He's sick. Doyle, how was your RBA experience?
It was my first time back since 2010. It's a beautiful stadium. I had the good fortune of going out there with our good friend Eric Goncalves, who Portuguese.
Gonçalves?
I asked him if he preferred Goncalves or Gonçalves. He said either one is fine.
Well, he threw you to the lion.
Yeah, right there. I've never heard anybody pronounce it that way.
I went out there with EG. Yeah.
Thank you.
And we ate our way in Portuguese food and drank our way in Portuguese wine. And then things went off the rail a little bit because there's like whatever the Portuguese version of grappa is, that started coming out as well. It's just a wonderful way to spend an afternoon. Tough way to wake up the next morning, though.
I would figure. What was your RBA takeaway, though? Red Bulls get a 3-0 win. Vancouver missing Jordy Reyna, missing Kendall Waston, Daniel Royer back.
I mean, it was a game, given the absence of Reyna and Waston, who I think are arguably the two most important players on Vancouver, it was a game the Red Bulls had to win. I was not surprised that they did, even though they've been struggling lately, because when they have Royer in there with Kleschen and BWP, they're a different team. They're so much more dangerous. The last, since they went to this 3-3-3-1 formation, or you could call it 3-6-1 or 5-4-1, whatever you want to call it, when they've had those three guys available and starting, they're 7-2-0 with a plus 15 goal differential. They go out there and they got guys who can light you up, and they looked good. But
7-2-0 puts them in a stratosphere with an MLS Cup contender.
Yeah, but I think I want to see what happens when they play Atlanta. There's only so much you can take from a home win over a good but shorthanded Vancouver team. This was a game that the Red Bulls should have won. Now they have Atlanta coming next week, and then they go down to DC United the week after that. And they don't have to win those games. They're not going to get out of sixth place in the Eastern Conference regardless, and they qualified, you know. So they are going to play whoever ends up in third place on the road. But I do want to see if this look can keep clicking, whether it's against a much better team in Atlanta or on the road in D.C. There's just these tests that, because of the injuries and because of the midseason formation switch, they haven't had a lot of chances to work through maybe a little bit of a rough patch.
A guy who's loving the formation chain, Tyler Adams, balling right now. Mm-hmm. Had the through ball for BWP's goal. Has had his first career goals, a couple of assists over the last few weeks. Plays with a lot of confidence for a teenager. He really enjoys what he's doing right now. So New York Red Bulls clinched their playoff spot with that win, which eliminated everyone else in the Eastern Conference mm-hmm. who was sitting on the edge. Sporting KC had the ability to clinch as well with a win over Minnesota United. They failed to do that. A 1-1 draw for Sporting KC. They also lose Tim Melia to injuries for 2 to 4 weeks. Sam McDowell's reporting, depending on what happens, that a huge injury. Tim Melia, probably goalkeeper of the year.
Will be goalkeeper.
Yeah.
That's a...
I'll make the Baron T. Yeah.
I'll usually wait for the next segment, but we can do it now.
Okay.
It's a Baron T. He's going to win goalkeeper of the year. So that's a huge loss for them. He's been lights out.
He has been. But they only have one shutout in their last almost 4 months now. One shutout since June 17th. They're not giving up a ton of goals, but...
One goal a game, basically.
Yeah, but it's not enough. You know, they have kind of squandered over the last 3 or 4 weeks the chance to really grab first place in the Western Conference and hold on to it. They're still in good shape to get a knockout round bye. Top two is pretty good, but Sporting's leaving points on the table, and it's because this just still of all the teams above the playoff line, they are just by far the worst attack. They can't put shots on goal. They don't convert the shots they do put on goal. They're not as dangerous in the air as they used to be. And when Failhaber's not out there conducting things in central midfield, they just don't have a lot of ideas.
And, of course, Benny Failhaber with the U.S. national team right now for World Cup qualifying, so he's not a part of that game. Sporting KC, a weird schedule because of these games in hand, so they actually have a Wednesday night game at Houston, which was the game that was moved because of Hurricane Harvey. And then they will play Houston again the following Sunday for the lead-up to Decision Day. SKC, they're in second place in the Western Conference, and they've not yet clinched their playoff spot. Every team in the Eastern Conference has already clinched. It's chaotic.
It's a wild, wild world.
FC Dallas, a 1-1 draw with Colorado, which doesn't really do them a lot of favors, puts them in sixth currently, but that game in hand would have been huge to create some separation with San Jose and RSL. Basically, all four teams something to play for. FC Dallas goes to Seattle, and their next one closes out with the LA Galaxy at home. That is the most exciting race left to watch in MLS, is those last two spots in the Western Conference.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be.
You sold it pretty well right there, Ben.
I've been doing that a lot today. I think their playoff probability dropped 1% because of the draw instead of the win. Colorado is not easy to beat on the road, and they did not get the job done.
I mean, we'll see what RSL do, because they're at Colorado next, and RSL finish with Colorado and then home against Sporting, so that's not easy.
It seems like all four teams, it's pretty even. Like, no one has a clear advantage in their schedules.
Other than Houston, just because they have an
extra
game.
Yeah. But I think
but a game that won't have Elise, won't have Kyoto, won't have
Boniac, exactly.
Won't have Machado.
Won't have DMB.
They got Manotas. They got your boy Kubo.
They got Chente.
They got Andrew Wenger.
Really, all they need is Chente.
Yeah. Magic in the hat. We're actually going to do Extra Time live from Houston on Wednesday night, post-game from that game. So it should be a good one. Although I won't see La Pantarita in person, which is part of the heartbreak. So all these teams qualifying means there are many teams now eliminated from the MLS playoffs, 3 teams in the Western Conference and 5 teams in the Eastern Conference. I don't want to forget about those teams because the next few weeks there's going to be a lot of talk about Atlanta and Seattle and Vancouver.
Why Atlanta first, Gus?
What?
Why did you say Atlanta first?
Because I don't think they're going to get a bye, and so therefore they're going to play in the knockout rounds. And they're playing TFC, who might be going for the record at home in front of a record crowd in MLS history on the last week.
Oh, okay.
And they're playing at Red Bull. So it seems like they're going to be a hot story.
All right, I just want them to check in. Well, see why they were the first team.
Was that enough reasoning?
Maybe.
I only had 8 reasons for you, Ben. And so let's put a bow on these teams that didn't get in. You look at the standings. You look in the Eastern Conference. 7th, Montreal. 8th, New England. 9th, Philadelphia. 10th, Orlando City. All tied on 39 points. DC United at the bottom on 32 points. Let's start big. Which of these was most underwhelming to you this year? Which of you are you most surprised or upset that they weren't able to get it together and get into a playoff race?
New England. The amount of talent they have, Lee Wynn, by the numbers, having his best year. And remember, he was an MVP candidate a couple of years back. They went out and spent money on defenders. I mean, they played really well at the start of the season with Juan Agudelo as that center forward role, and then they just changed everything. Agudelo hasn't played as a forward since June, and those defenders they brought in underwhelmed. Everybody ended up.
De La Mea was, I think he's been pretty good. He's been all right.
He's
been a decent signing.
He's had his moments. He's had some shockers, too. But it was supposed to be like, okay, we learned our lesson from 2016 because they just tried to ride that same group of players from 2014 for years and years, and they're like, okay, we learned our lesson. We're going to, you know, bring in guys who can do the job, and they didn't. And it cost Jake Heaps his job, and I don't think Tommy Soane's going to be back as the head coach next year either. And I feel like this roster is going to get blown up, and it didn't have to be. This is a roster that was more than talented enough to make the playoffs.
Rumors being spread by coaches' agents that they're talking to certain coaches, which have to trust
Shockwave.
And believe. Yeah.
Oh.
Shockwave rolls through. Oh, my guy is being interested in. Yeah. For you, who stands out?
I think the easy answer is Montreal to me because they were in the Eastern Conference Championship. I'm not going to go with them. I'm going to go with Orlando. The way they started the season, their defense was on point. Kyle Lahren was scoring goals. And it just seemed like...
Did they really pass the eye test for you those first 2 months, though?
Not 100%. But clearly, somewhere along the way, they kind of lost what got them to, I think, what? They won 6 of their first 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
And they just lost it, and they could never get it back. They had all the energy from the new stadium. That was really exciting from a neutral fan's perspective. Kakao couldn't get it going. Jonathan Spector got injured eventually. And Jason Kreisch just couldn't figure out how to stop conceding goals.
Yeah. I still don't know what that team's best lineup, best formation. Like, you see they have a couple of nice core pieces. Obviously, Yotun and Dwyer's going to be back and a few others. But it's...
To me, it's the fact... They're built kind of to the way they would have to play to win is play more defensive and then hope some one or two of their players can create something special. Those guys just didn't do it. You know, Kaká. Kyle Lahren was out with
Christ likes with his Seb DUI Hines, who's played 4 games this year. So if you think he's your second best center back and he plays 4 games, that's a big part of your problem. And Jonathan Spector as well, you mentioned, played 22, 23 games this year when you want a guy like that playing 31 or so games.
And then you have, Notarino, he's a very specific type of player. He's not going to be running around causing havoc. Sometimes he just kind of loses where he is on the field and he can't catch up. And that's how they can see some goals.
So let's give these fans hope. Doyle for New England. What do they need to do for next year? What, in your mind, makes them promising for next year?
Well, they're probably going to have Wynn, Rowe, Fagundes back, and I think that's a good trio to start with. And as Ben said, De La Mea is pretty decent. I'm not sure what they're going to do up top. I don't know if Kai Kamara is going to be back. They'll have Nemeth there, but I don't know if he's a winger or forward. I don't know what they see with Agudelo, whether they because they've been using him in midfield again. I don't know if there's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
is
a lot.
Is Kolasi a DP in Major League Soccer?
No.
No.
Nope. Okay. And neither is Dielna.
Not a DP. But
not a DP. Yeah. So, they both are. I don't know what to say, Revs fans.
Well, this was what I was hoping for, is to give us some promise and hope for fans. For Orlando or for Revs? Choose which one. You could do both.
Well, there's three other teams we need to talk about.
I know.
Here.
Well, we're going to get to
that. Okay. Orlando, I think there's a lot of money coming off the books for these players, and you're going to have a chance to rebuild the roster a bit. I don't know if I would start with a Dwyer-Laren pairing, which is we've seen has worked on some occasions in Atlanta.
Don't we assume
not.
That Laren is going to be sold this offseason?
Do we?
We haven't really heard anything recently. You would think that they wouldn't be able to get to $1.6 million in allocation money without selling Laren to give to SKC.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
So, I was assuming they thought that was what's going to happen. But, yeah, I just think you have a chance to rebuild the roster, but you don't know what's going to happen with Kaká. We're hearing rumors both ways, kind of. I think Notarino's coming off the books. Some of the other defenders, you get a chance to rebuild a little
bit. It's a rebuild, and I think they have to do the Atlanta United thing. I think they got to go out and get young, quick, exciting Latin American talent.
Which is what they tried to do with Rivas.
With Rivas.
And sort of with Brian Rocha.
Yeah, Rivas, I forgot to mention him. He started the season so well, and he was a reason why they could scrape together. They could play more defensive and then scrape
so
together
well
one or two.
Just him getting playing time.
But he had like five or six assists. In
he was
creating problems for
those
opposing defenses.
Those were wayward shots. From 60.
I'm not talking about his shots. I'm talking about his passing.
Okay. So let's move on. Let's look at the rest of the Eastern Conference first. Philadelphia Union. There was a lot of question marks. The Project, Ernie Stewart, Jim Curtin working together. Jay Simpson was the big signing in the offseason, which you were super excited about.
Oh, yeah.
Doyle.
The next BWP, right?
When you look at this team where they are now, what do you see going forward?
Another team with a lot of money coming out of the books.
Yeah. I mean, Harris Madunian was a nice signing.
Scored a goal for Bosnia and Herzegovina this week.
Wijnaldum was serviceable at left back. Simpson was not anything.
Rosenberry lost his job.
Lost his job.
And then got it back.
Yeah. I think the most disappointing thing from a Union fan standpoint has to be that the young guys didn't really improve. Like, if you're going to be a team that doesn't go out and break the bank on DPs, then you have to be able to get Keegan Rosenberry to improve year one over year two, and Richie Marquez to improve year three over year four.
Josh Herbers.
Josh Yarrow.
Josh Yarrow did not look like an MLS caliber player for most of the time he was on the field. Herbers missed most of the year injured, so you give him the pass there. But like all the stuff that they were supposed to build upon from last year didn't happen. And CJ Sapong having a career year finishing papered over enough cracks for them to like pseudo be in the playoff race for most of the year, but never really above it. CJ Sapong is probably not going to score 15 goals again next year. Aguchi Anewu isn't going to be able to give them 2,000 pretty good minutes again next year.
You said that before the season, though.
Yeah, it's true. But like twice in a row at his age with his injury history, it's hard to see that happening.
Well,
I wouldn't count
Union
on it.
Union fans appreciate this because he loves the haters.
He does love the haters.
He churns on Matt Doyle hate.
Right.
So now you give them a chance that he might be able to do it next year.
My question is, you have Bedoya, you have Madunian in. How do you
Alberg's
play?
Probably gone.
Yeah, Alberg, Elsino, I think, is probably
Moadu,
gone.
Moadu, I think, is
Chris,
gone.
Chris Pontius, possibly. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens with that and possible expansion draft.
They got to go find their own Rushnak. You know,
yeah, can they play? Can Madunian can't? To me, he's not. You can't play like a number six in MLS.
He can when he has a guy like Bedoya next to him. I mean, Bedoya, in terms of just reading the game and understanding how to fill gaps, he's so quick to do it, and he's so like. There's a reason why the Union are actually by the numbers a pretty good defensive team, and Bedoya has a good. He's a big part of that.
So you think if they can go out and get a number 10, they've got the defensive pieces. They've got the wingers. They've got the forward.
No, I'm not. I think that getting a number 10 would improve them. You know, would would make it so that you don't need to get a career season out of CJ Sapong. It would make them more respectable. But if you look at Keegan Rosenberry year one to year two, that doesn't make you confident about Jack Elliott from year one to year two. So it's very much you shrug. You know, this is a team and a roster in flux, and it's going to be a big year for Jim Curtin if he's back, and Ernie Stewart both.
You look at it going down the Eastern Conference, DC United, the last team that we haven't talked about. They made the huge moves in the summer, broke their record with Paul Arriola.
What about there's also Montreal.
We didn't talk about Montreal yet? Oh, you said I'm not going to say Montreal.
Yeah, I'm not going to
say Montreal. Do you want to talk about Montreal? Montreal broke my heart this year.
I think the Oyongo injury is huge for them.
Yeah.
I still think they haven't found I think we kind of know that Victor Cabrera is probably not the answer next to Simon, and we didn't see that this year.
I mean, Simon wasn't that good this year.
They brought in Piet, but then
he had a good four games.
Yeah, and then that was it.
And then people were like, "Oh, he can't really run," which is unfair. He actually he's been pretty good, and I think if you have, you know, Piet and insert box-to-box midfielder here to replace Patrice Bernier and Jamali.
Gilardino, that's his name.
Right, incorrect. you know, a three-man central midfield like that, and then you have Piatti.
Who's re-signed,
and Jackson Hamel, who I like a lot, and one of the million wingers that they have to play. Like, you look at that there's some stuff there.
Which I think is what we saw when they were good was when Jamali was scoring and Piatti was scoring. They were good enough to carry them, but they can't do that for 34 games.
And it's because, like Ben said, like that defense, you can just beat them up. You could just manhandle them in the box. And who, you know, MLS is still a pretty physical league. And if that's your weakness, you're not going to win a ton of games.
You look at the rivalry. We were up there for the Toronto game. Josie just owns that back line.
Yeah.
Gives Giovinco freedom to move wherever he wants because he just creates space for them. Now, can we talk about DC United?
Sure.
They're going to open up Audi Field next year. RFK's done. October 22nd, Atlantic Cup against the Red Bulls. It's one of the worst things in my life. I've never been to a game there. It seems like I won't make it to
you
that
You went
one.
To the 2000 MLS Cup?
I wasn't.
I was.
You were at the 2000 MLS Cup? I wish that I had the VIP status that Ben Bear lives his life with. that's my only dream sometimes. When you look at DC, do you see the game plan? Do you see the map bringing in young Paul Arriola to play next to Lucho Acosta?
I think we 100% see it. You see Arriola, you see Knaus, who's played well. Mm-hmm. Harks, I would have liked to have seen him play the last few games instead of getting benched. We see Chris Durkin.
Gotta see what Marcelo Saravas has left.
Yeah, exactly. So
we
see what Chris Durkin's doing for the 17s.
He was so good.
Stieber, we haven't seen enough of. I haven't seen enough of to really have any opinion on him yet. And then I think they do go out and get a striker in the offseason, even though Patty Mullins scores four goals in a game.
And they got Deshaun Brown.
And then, you know.
Aren't you concerned about that defense?
Yeah.
They were supposed to be good this year, and part of it was supposed to be Birnbaum raising his game a level and, you know, maybe one of the other guys doing the same thing, and it went the other direction. I mean, Birnbaum, individually, he was so disappointing this season.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good analysis, guys.
They have problems on the back, and I think the six is pretty. I'm liking what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. I think obviously the big cloud over this entire discussion is Bill Hamid.
Yeah.
We have no idea what's going to happen. I think if he's not back. DC fans, I think they know already how big he's been over the past 4 years, but now they're really going to know.
Steve Clark's a pretty good keeper, though. Like,
he's not Bill Hamid.
He's not Bill Hamid, for sure. He's not Bill
How Hamid. Many goals different do you think if Steve Clark is in there?
I don't want to put a number on it. I'll just say it's a downgrade.
Maybe not this season as much. Bill Hamid has single-handedly won many games over the past 4 years for DC.
That's fair.
Okay, let's look at the Western Conference now, DC United. I'm excited about the new stadium. I'm excited about the young players. It's going to be a good year for DC United in 2018. I can feel it. I can feel it in my
bones. You want to put any guarantees in this?
Yeah. I'll put a guarantee that they win the World Cup in 2018. Let's move
Chicago Fire's got
to. Let's move on to the Western Conference. Sitting on the bottom is the LA Galaxy. We've talked about them a decent amount this year. So we don't have to tear apart the corpse anymore. Let's talk about hope and promise for next year, Ben. What gets you excited? What if you were talking to an LA Galaxy fan right now? Would you say, hey, in December and January, think about this?
I think that the Galaxy front office knows as much as we do about who's coming into the league next year, what LAFC represents for them, and they know they have to step their game up. So if I'm a Galaxy fan, obviously you've had all the history, all the best team in MLS, and this year you come out and you're the last place team. They're not going to take this lightly. We know they're going to do something in the offseason. We don't know what it is. That's what I would be excited about if I'm a Galaxy fan. They have to do something, and they're going to do it.
Doyle, is there anything you'd like to add to that? I know you've already beaten this tree down.
Yeah, the problem is we've talked about this for hours and hours.
I think Ziggy's going to take he's going to have more of a hand on the till when it comes to player acquisition and identification than probably Kurt Anolfo did or whoever from last year. Say what you want about Ziggy. He's built a lot of winners in this league. So I think whether he gets the credit for it or not, I think that just based upon that, they're in a better place to make positive, meaningful acquisitions than they were at this point last year. Like, they'll probably recognize that they need to sign one or two defenders somehow that escaped them last winter.
And guys who don't all play the same position.
Perhaps.
Some that play in the center and some that play on the outside.
You think?
No, let's just sign 12 more number eights.
Is there any chance that Ziggy... Ziggy's 100% back, is what you thought?
I think so. I admit it's an open question, which is troubling, because this team has been so, 1-12-4 in their last 17 games. That's half a season. That's just dire. But I don't think they signed him for 6 months. I assume that he's going to get next year as well, or at least part of it.
Let's move up the Western Conference. Colorado, there are two games unbeaten to close out the season so far.
Break up the Rapids.
It is really, really fun stuff to watch in Colorado right now. Flick-ons and through balls and the whole thing.
Going to be the ultimate spoilers over the next couple weeks?
Yeah, they're going to be the ultimate spoilers. What do you look at with this that gets you excited if you're a Colorado fan? What present do you give Colorado fans to close the year?
The unknown. I have no idea what...
Oh, God.
I have no idea
that's a good start.
What this team is aiming towards, what they're trying to be.
As we didn't last year.
Yeah.
And they went and got to the Western Conference Finals.
Oh, correct. So there you go. Lightning striking twice.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's happening with Colorado. It's tough to tell. It's mysterious, like Ben.
I would actually describe the Colorado Rapids if I had to compare them to a human being as Ben Bear.
Yes, I like
great
that.
Stuff.
Okay.
The Ben Bear.
I think you could be excited about Don Baggi. Kevin Doyle is off the books.
Signed an extension.
He's off the books. He's had to retire due to concussions. Agner looks like a player in the little we've seen with him. And there's a lot of other questions. There are a couple of bright spots.
Like Courtney Ford's been fun.
Yeah, like there's
Courtney Ford's the best.
Tim Howard is Tim Howard.
Okay.
I mean, he had a couple howlers against Vancouver a couple
years
ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tim Howard might not be Tim Howard anymore, actually.
Let us march forward to Minnesota United. They're officially eliminated after going on this great run over the last few weeks to give their fans some hope. Still a lot of fun soccer from them. Obviously, the comeback in Atlanta gave them a little bit, evening up on the bragging rights with Atlanta, who I think have had arguably the better expansion season. Can I say that comfortably? Is that allowed?
I think that's allowed.
Okay. When you look at Minnesota, what gets you excited? What's biggest for them to do in this offseason?
I mean, the amount of attacking talent is the thing to be excited about with this team. Don Lai.
They don't need two or three more wingers?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hoping, right? I'm hoping they go out and sign Eden Hazard and, maybe a few others.
Arjen Robben?
Yes. Don Lai has had a great second half of the season. Christian Ramirez is obviously a stud. Kevin Molino, 7 goals, 9 assists, hasn't been perfect, but he's had a good year, especially when he's played on the wing, not as a number 10. Ethan Finlay's kind of revitalized himself. Miguel Ibarra, the Costa Rican guy, Leiton, who they just signed. I feel like
Who
hasn't played at all, but he's a Costa Rican.
Nicholson,
who I'm not sold on. But, like, there's a lot of attacking talent, so they're going to have a lot of chances to make some trades, which are coming, and to try to shape the roster, maybe give it a little bit more of a spine this year so they don't give up 25 goals in their first three games, and you know, not have that disastrous start. But if you look, historically speaking, I think this is like the sixth best expansion team of all time in terms of total points or points per game.
Yeah.
Behind, like, obviously Chicago, Atlanta,
Seattle,
Orlando. And then it's these guys. Like, that's pretty good. It's pretty good. And, you know, Adrian Heath was right about Don Lottie being a game-breaking talent. He's scored some bangers. And so they have some stuff to build around. They're going to have to do really good work in the trade market because you can't come back next season with 17 wingers. Like, some of those guys, you're going to have to flip for central midfielders, you know, maybe a true young defensive midfielder, though I like what I've seen from Colin Martin, and obviously more depth at center back.
I feel like Colin Martin at 45 years old could jump on an MLS field, and Doyle will be like, I kind of like what I see from Colin
Martin. Better than Ibsen.
Sam Cronin's also been out for weeks now.
Mark Birch was out for a huge stretch, the guy they traded for.
And we're talking about Sam Cronin's 31, Mark Birch is 33, you know, like, both these guys, I think, are over 20,000 career minutes or close to it anyway. Like, eventually players wear down. Yet they have to start addressing beyond that. And I think, again, maybe that's what they've done a little bit by getting playing time for some younger guys. But this was a team that felt they lost games this year because they were so thin. And they can't let that happen again.
Well, we're going to go to the mailbag to answer your questions about your MLS teams and what they're missing and what they need to do here on Extra Time Radio.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, Sirius XMFC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com, driven by Continental. David Goss, Matt Doyle, and Ben Baer in the, I don't know what room Weeby would call this. I don't even look at the walls. Weeby just loves
these
the
walls
color.
Are green and white.
So is this but this isn't the green calling? Room. That's the thing. Weeby has a room in this office that he calls the green room.
There's a lot of rooms in this office.
So I don't know what to call this one. It has a lot of pieces of paper stapled to the wall.
This is really good radio.
Yeah. No, this is well, people like visual stuff when they like to talk about radios. We should talk about bad refereeing calls, and we should show them, and then we can just talk about them.
Yes.
That would be good radio.
See you next time.
That would be great radio. Simon Bohr currently doing actual work and not talking and sitting here with us. We've got lots of questions, lots of great emails. We will, of course, be back with Club and Country on Tuesday night. Before and after the Trinidad and Tobago game on MLSsoccer.com, YouTube, Facebook, everything else. So make sure to...
Yeah, the pregame show will just be on Facebook, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But so the postgame show will be on the site, YouTube, and Facebook.
401-206-0MLS. You can at BenBear89.
Mm-hmm.
You can send all of your questions or comments at him as well, and we can get them in the show.
I want your personal...
Whoa.
I mean, yeah. Personal insults, I'll take them, yeah.
Okay. I was just talking about...
Yeah, I was worried that was going to go somewhere else, but that's... Okay.
Ben's asking for punishment here, but we just saying, if you have any thoughts about the U.S. national team, like this. Clifford Beshers tweets, any idea why we don't see the long passes dropped over the back line from Michael Bradley anymore? It's a big part of the U.S. game plan from 2012 to 14-ish, 15?
I don't know. I mean, like... Bradley hits a nice long ball, but we're not a team that just opens up and lets our front runners kind of fly. I think the U.S. are kind of better when they keep it on the ground and try to do a little bit of combination play. I mean, that said, the first goal against Panama was pure Route 1, you know, knockdown header to a flick to the to the goal. But I just don't think that's the way they want to play the game right now. And part of it is if you're gonna send runners forward like that and you hit a long ball and you don't win it, suddenly you're dislocated. Suddenly you're not able to get pressure to the ball. Suddenly you're making it easier for the other team to start marching up the field and building something useful against you. It's just not the most efficient way to do it. That said, if the opportunity presents, Bradley will hit that pass.
It seems like
we're going to see it tomorrow. It's on Tuesday.
Right.
Because I'm feeling because the ball's not going to be rolling.
Yeah.
You're just going to have Bobby Wood trying
it's
to gonna run,
be. It's going to have to be defense. Set pieces and knockdowns.
Yeah.
Michael Bradley maybe gets some offensive production in that one. He was not quiet against Panama, but he doesn't have the same responsibility when Pulisic's playing.
Nor should he.
Right.
I mean, his job is to protect that back line and to make sure that, you know, the worst doesn't happen. And so far he's been pretty good at it.
That's never been the case in his national team career. Even when he started and was the defensive midfielder, he scores the goal against Slovenia. Like, there needed to be moments where he had to push
it. Remember, Moadu was on the field when he scored that goal against Slovenia. So Bradley was more of a box-to-box. I mean,
Moadu also scored a goal in that game.
Right. True. Onside.
Oh, man.
This is, I mean, his job is to let those other guys go forward and overwhelm the opposition. That's it. He's not being asked to do a thousand things like he was under Klinsmann.
He should have to play both positions as well as fullback.
Correct.
I believe that would get the best out of him. Andrew Gray asked about the formation that we should be playing. He said 3-5-2. I'm sorry, but I don't have enough faith in our back line. We need all the help we can get on our defense. Our offense peppers shots.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying. So 3-5-2. Are you okay with this U.S. national team leaving Pulisic, Wood, Josie, and maybe one of the wingers to just you guys go and attack, and we defend as a unit?
I mean, we talked about this in the first segment. I think Ben and I are both pretty okay with that. You know, it's not playing for a zero. It's just trying to minimize your risks. The news just coming through now via Stephen Goff. Pulisic dealing with a calf injury, may or may not be full strength by kickoff on Tuesday. Obviously, if he can't go, it changes a lot of plans in a lot of different ways.
Brandon says, Christian Pulisic sounds like Landon Donovan with his post-game interviews. Carrying himself with a decent air for a young player with a lot of pressure on him. You have to be impressed.
I didn't see any post-game interviews. I can't comment.
Yeah, I don't.
I would say generally he's pretty. He seems pretty mature. He handled himself well in the 60 Minutes interview.
He seems fine, but like I mean, my approach to post game videos is just like Bull Durham. You know, players just go out of their way to try to say almost nothing. So if
like Juan Carlos Osorio,
right? You know, that complete word salad about Giovanni Dos Santos, like. Players and coaches generally try not to say anything, so I don't pay a lot of attention to the post-game stuff.
Just if you are a Wisconsin football fan like I am, and I'm just saying, the way that Paul Chris, the head coach, conducts his post-game interviews is literally perfect because he literally says nothing.
It's just Crash Davis.
Ever. He literally says nothing. I've never heard him say anything that's been anything interesting.
I'm putting an end to this because this is the worst thing that's ever happened in ETR history. Paul Feldman from Houston, respect to Orlando for the atmosphere and doing the national anthem right. And Calvin from Gary, Indiana, I think. Josie haters are really grasping at straws these days. They may have needed counseling services if he got that hat trick. Josie stepped up.
Josie stepped up. He's the second all-time leading scorer in hexagonal history for everybody, not just U.S. I mean, obviously, he's the leading scorer all time for U.S. national team in hexagonal history. We saw what he did in the Gold Cup this summer, got the game winner in the semifinal, the go-ahead goal, the first goal in the final. Remember what he did in 2009? Saw what he did for Philly for Toronto, in the playoffs. And remember what he did for AZ in the Cup against Ajax, I think it was, 3 or 4 years ago. He has had big moments. The U.S. fan base struggles to forgive players for coming home from Europe, for not wanting to spend their entire life in Europe. So there's that. And the other thing is he doesn't have a World Cup moment.
Yeah.
Once Brian McBride scored that goal against Portugal in 2002. People loved him. People loved him. And I remember in the build-up to that World Cup, a lot of fans wanted McBride to be dropped. But then he won them over because he had that big World Cup moment in a game the U.S. won. Until Josie has that, he will always be, I think, underappreciated by this fan base.
He had the Spain moment in Confed Cup.
Yeah, but that's not
as close as you could get.
And I agree. I'm with Gasman. The Confederations Cup is an awesome tournament, and that game was huge.
And that year, the way it was played, by
I don't
Brazil
know why Ben
Spain,
always dumps it's on not, it. What? No, defend yourself.
No, Ben.
If you talk to casual U.S. fans,
mm-hmm.
generally, from
mm-hmm.
my experience,
I would
they don't
do
like
that.
Josie.
Yeah,
they really don't. They don't. I think he might tantalize them a little bit more than some. They just think he should be the most dominant player in the field.
They're pissed that he's not Drogba.
Basically,
yeah. That's it.
I think he's the most famous player right now on the U.S. national team. I think he's the guy the most casual.
Whoa,
fans
no.
There was a player on this team that was on CBS on 60 Minutes.
You think Pulisic's already the most famous player to a
I think 100%. Pulisic and Dempsey are both more famous.
Dempsey maybe.
Howard
Dempsey,
maybe too.
Howard. But Howard doesn't play in the field, so he doesn't count.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it's Pulisic.
Maybe we should start talking about Wisconsin football again.
Yeah, for sure. That would be a good idea.
The amount of times that UConn is mentioned on this show.
Sure. Hey.
Go Huskies. We have draft picks who actually make it in this league. Sorry.
Okay, AJ Cochran.
Love. Exactly. Bearded Jack from New Jersey shirt idea. I would love nothing more than a shirt that had Matt Beasley's bloodied face with the words "For Club and Country" on it. That's a pretty solid shirt. Matt Beasley had bandaged one eye and then in this game got cut on his other eye and was bleeding.
My only question is that we have all these shirt ideas.
Yeah.
Somebody, one of our fans,
uh-oh,
has to be able to make shirts.
I don't know. I mean, I think we're supposed to be the one.
Let us
that.
Know. I know we're supposed to be figuring that out. We're lazy.
Where's your entrepreneurial spirit?
Okay. We've got a uh-huh. This is good for you because Brian's from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is in Wisconsin.
I'll be back there on Friday.
Fantastic. I'm sure he'd be excited to see you. He's a Fire fan. He wants to say that he would love to see Doyle's Elf socks be a part of the 2018 U.S. home kit. What does that mean?
What was that?
I don't know.
Were you wearing Elf socks? On
no,
the
I had red, white, and blue America socks. I had
maybe that's what he means.
Yeah,
I think that's what he meant.
I guess maybe they looked like Elf socks.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's against the code of the American flag, but that's your own decision. And this is a text from Matt Doyle himself. I'd like to see Marky Delgado play in the World Cup. He has
that is not
he's
a text
an excellent
from
passer.
Me.
He seems like he passes with his hands, so they're so direct. And he works well with Bradley and Altidor. Would love to see him play in the World Cup.
That's
the fourth text we've gotten from that phone number. We don't have a name about Marky Delgado, and I'm
is it a Gloucester, Massachusetts?
No,
the phone number.
It's definitely not.
Because then I would have an idea.
Let's get MLS. Lee from BX says, wondering how the Toronto Shield win compares to other early Shield wins since its inception.
I mean, the record for biggest spread is 10 points, and that's from 98 with the Galaxy. I would imagine, and I haven't looked to see when they clinched, but I can't imagine it was much earlier than what Toronto managed. And Toronto right now, their lead is 9 points over NYCFC. They could do some stuff here. I mean, we've talked about it all year. They could set some records that are going to be tough to break.
Do you guys want some serious hot takes?
Yeah.
Did these come through the hot take hotline?
Yeah, they did. Okay, this was an email, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. The Road Rambler here, hot take. Mike Pecky lifts an MLS Cup before New York Red Bulls does. I like Jesse Marsh, but it has to be one of the worst decisions in MLS history. The New York Red Bulls continue to have the same problems they always have, and Pecky was the only coach strong enough to rid them of a lifetime of not quite good enough.
I don't see that as being correct. I think that Mike Pecky's done really good stuff, but he didn't. Jesse Marsh won a Shield as well with New York and took
as did Mike Pecky.
Yeah, that's why I said as well.
Yeah.
In addition to.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Pecky's a really good coach. I think Marsh is one of the best coaches in this league. And the Red Bulls' problem this year isn't some sort of systemic not quite good enough. It's that their two best defenders got hurt. and they've been trying to make do without that all year. So, you know, occasionally they have to play Fidel Escobar, which doesn't work out well for them. But I'm this Red Bulls team is a fun dark horse team in the East. And if RSL make it, to be fair to Pecky, if RSL make it, they're going to be a fun dark horse team in the West. That said, no, Severino's tough.
Speaking of the West, Toronto Duck, how can you say Valeri's an MVP and Golden Boot favorite, but not say Portland is favorite to win the Western Conference?
Because there's 11 players on the field in soccer.
That's why we have the stats guy, Ben Bear. He always knows the numbers.
Do Portland convince you? Do they? I mean, obviously they.
Their defense does not convince me. No.
Yeah. They're right now. They're tied for third.
Does anyone in the West convince you, Ben?
Honestly, no.
Yeah. Same. No, like I.
So Portland's in there with everyone else.
Yeah, and they got a match winner, so Valeri could, you know, put this team on his back.
Like Piotti did.
Let's just
year.
What is the like, you know how for the NFL they do the Super Bowl lines, conference versus conference, like months in advance, like they already have it. Like, what is the line East versus? I mean, there's not really lines. How heavy of a favorite is the East over West right now?
I don't know that it can be because you're gonna have to slog your way through the East.
But anybody who slides their way through
the East,
but
they're gonna
East.
Be hosting MLS Cup.
True. Most likely.
Unless the Red Bulls or the Crew have a miraculous run,
or Vancouver catches Chicago in terms of points.
Chicago's not getting past Atlanta, New York City, or Toronto. Okay.
I would say they're like the East is almost like already like a -200.
Yeah,
over
it's,
the West.
They're big favorites.
Okay, well there it is. Everyone, buy your tickets to the East. You can take a plane to the East and go to MLS Cup, guaranteed now, right?
Well, I mean,
we don't
Chicago's,
know where it goes.
Chicago's the Midwest.
Yeah.
But it's in the Eastern Conference.
Well, you just fly east, and whether you end up in Toronto or Atlanta, they're pretty close together, right?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty similar. Well, it's been fun. We will be back for Club and Country after the U.S. national team game. We'll be back, of course, with your podcast and radio show later this week. Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com, driven by Continental. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Andrew, for being sick so that I got to host the show today. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be right back.